Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 16th of March. Democratic congressional leaders struck a tentative agreement on Thursday of last week that's breathing new life into the president's proposed overhaul of federal student loan programs. Here's the deal. It would bundle the bill into an expedited budget package along with the Democratic health care legislation, which would allow for both measures to be passed by the Senate on a simple majority vote. Without the deal, the student loan bill would have been unlikely to pass because it lacked the 60 votes needed to overcome a filibuster. We talk about the issue of student loans and this particular measure this hour of the program with Doug Letterman. He is one of the three founders of Inside Higher Education. He leads the site's editorial operations, the news content, the opinion pieces, career advice, blogs, and other features. He speaks widely about higher education on C-SPAN, National Public Radio, at meetings all around the country. And he began his career as a news clerk at the New York Times. He has worked at the Chronicle of Higher Education in a number of different capacities, as an athletics reporter and also as an editor, and he won a number of awards for education reporting. We're going to be welcoming phone calls about this important issue. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address, if you'd like to use that way of communicating with us, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Doug Letterman, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Well, let's start with what the overall here is. What has the education secretary proposed in terms of?
So this goes back till about a year ago when President Obama announced sort of a goal of having getting the country back on top of the international rankings of countries in terms of how what proportion of their populations are have a college credential of some kind, and to do that, to sort of attain that, the U.S. has sort of slipped in those rankings. He proposed a pretty massive overhaul of the student loan programs that would that was designed to produce a whole bunch of money to sort of savings that are that now go to into subsidies for student for bankers and others that provide federal student loans to sort of grab that money back and pour it into a bunch of purposes that are designed both to help students afford college more and also to create some changes in how colleges operate in ways that are designed to get them to be more productive. And so he basically proposed a whole bunch of money for the Pell Grant program, this massive initiative for community colleges, and a series of other changes that are designed to sort of change how the reward structure for how to try and get colleges to change the way they operate some. So there was a this sort of transfer of money that they were going to do by changing the structure of the loan programs. And this is a little complicated, but so we can go into that to the extent you want. But basically changing the structure of the loan programs in a way that would produce a bunch of money that he would then put toward purposes that are designed to help students afford college and get colleges. So that was the sort of big picture goal. What happened is, and then the House passed this measure pretty solidly, mostly with Democratic support last fall. Then this bill got stuck in line behind health care. And the reasons why sort of have, you did a good job in your quick intro of describing it, but basically there was this desire to, because they weren't sure that they could pass it, the main reason that the student loan measure waited was because the Congress was not sure and the president were not sure that they could pass health care. And there's this strange congressional budget process called budget reconciliation that you described as this sort of shortcut process that allows a vote with just, a vote just up or down 50%, 51 votes in the Senate. They did not want to. Congress can only pass one of those bills a year. And because they needed to sort of keep that as a safe way to go for health care, they couldn't pass the student loan legislation. They sort of needed to hold the student loan legislation back until they could get in case it needed to be connected to health care. And in fact, that's what has happened in the last week.
So let me get this clarified. The Senate had problems with what the House passed?
On the student loan bill?
Yes.
No.
They didn't?
Well, the Senate could not have passed it. I mean, I guess they drew a conclusion that the Senate couldn't pass it through normal means. In other words, they didn't necessarily have the 60 votes to pass it through. So the student loan legislation was almost always going to be done through this budget reconciliation process. The big question was whether health care also needed to go that route. And, you know, Congress sort of worked on health care, and it was looking through the end of last year like they might pass it through regular means. But then when the election happened and the Democrats lost sort of the 60-vote margin in Congress, that pretty much assured that health care wasn't going to be able to go through, quote, regular order. And so that meant that health care needed to be done through budget reconciliation. And that's so they basically held the Democrats basically held the student loan legislation back until they knew, you know, because they thought they might need to push health care through reconciliation. Does that make sense?
Sort of,
the bottom line is health care is the administration's top priority by far and above. So if Congress couldn't pass health care through sort of the regular order with a 60-vote margin, they needed to have the sort of peace of mind that if they needed to, they could push health care through budget reconciliation.
Right.
And because Congress can only consider one budget reconciliation piece of legislation each year, they needed to hold on to the student loan legislation in case it needed to be connected to health care in budget reconciliation.
I understand.
And that's where they've ended up.
All right. So being connected means what? It's a part of the health care bill?
They have there will be one piece of legislation considered in the next few days that basically has these two things merged. And that's got some real implications for, I think it's still in doubt. I mean, the timing here is really interesting. It is still in doubt because healthcare is the top priority. If right now they're spending lots of time trying to figure out whether if they are at all concerned that the student loan legislation will cost them votes on health care, they will jettison it. They will, you know, they will. So the student loan legislation will pass only as long as they're convinced that it will help pass health care rather than hurt it. And so right now, basically what they're doing is, you know, sometime today there's going to be a piece of legislation that's put forward that has these two big, massive things merged into one.
Oh my!
And it's having some very negative implications for the student loan legislation, because right now it's looking like because the student loan legislation produces money, it's looking like some of that money is going to be used to help pay for health care, meaning that there will be less money available for the original purposes of sort of helping students and. So it's a really interesting but big mess.
Yes.
And there's the other sort of major thing that's changed. When the House considered this bill and when the administration proposed it last year, the Congressional Budget Office, which basically determines sort of how much, there's something called a process called scoring where the Congressional Budget Office sort of says, this is how much this bill will produce in terms of revenue and how much it'll cost. And these budget measures have to be budget neutral. They can't spend more than they produce. Last year when the Congressional Budget Office first scored this bill, it projected that it would produce $87 billion, that this changeover in the student loan programs, and let me give you a 30-second version of that. Right now, for the last 15, 20 years, there have been two competing student loan programs. One that's been around the longest, in which lenders, you know, banks and other state agencies make loans through schools to students. So the lenders and these private entities provide the money that goes to students through the schools. The other is a government-run program, and it's been about, for the last few years, it's about two-thirds of the schools, maybe even three-quarters, have been in the lender program called the Guaranteed Student Loan Program. The other, and about a quarter to a third, have been in the, quote, direct student loan program. So you've got these two student loan programs. What this would do would basically be to stop, and the government pays money to the lenders to originate, to create those loans in the guaranteed loan program. What this would do would be to sort of end lending through that privately funded program and shift all lending into the government program. And the money that the government now pays to lenders to create those loans would instead come back to the government. So that's where the sort of savings come from.
Okay. Well, let me ask you your opinion of that. Is that a good idea?
You know, it's not, there are pros and cons, and I'm going to be a journalist here and say that I can't express a firm opinion on it. But there are, I mean, basically the way it works is that there is a cost to the government of lending, you know, of making these loans through the banks, and it is seen as a costlier program. There's lots of dispute and debate about how those numbers are calculated. But the government's argument here is, we can do this more cost effectively than the private market can, and this money can go to students and help them pay for college. The other thing you have to remember is that the government's argument got a lot stronger 2 years ago when the economy tanked, and right now even the government is basically providing much of the money. You know, it's basically lending money to the lenders to lend to students. So right now, the sort of deterioration of the financial markets have made it so that even the sort of quote private program isn't really that private anymore. There was sort of a bailout of the student loan lenders, just like there was a bailout of some of the big financial firms. Well, this is one way in which the financial collapse has actually been in the government's interest, because it's actually made it harder for lenders to say, we've got this private market that's working. That private market hasn't been working. And the government's argument is, listen, we're spending money right now to sort of prop up this program, and we can spend that money better.
Right.
You're still hearing Republicans talk about a government takeover of this, just like, you know, and right now there's something, I just got a news release this morning from John Boehner's office in the House Minority Leader saying, you know, this bill now has two big government takeovers, health care and student loans. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that it's not nearly as much of a take. If there was a takeover, it was when the lenders stopped having the money to finance their own loans.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of whether or not, maybe this changes hour by hour, in terms of whether or not including this student loan overhaul in the health bill, where does it stand? Will it help to pass the bill, or will it hurt it?
There are things, it cuts both ways and it does change. The main way in which it helps is that, as I said, there is, right now, they are looking at using somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 billion from the student loan transformation to help balance the bill out and financially. So in some ways, right now, unless they find other ways, the healthcare, the Democrats need the student loan thing attached to make the healthcare bill work financially. So right now, that's working very much in the student loan bill's interest, in terms of having, the Democrats basically feel like they need to attach the student loan bill to make this bill, this package, financially viable and sort of meet Congress's sort of deficit reduction requirements. Whether the tricky part is there is opposition to the student loan bill. The lenders, a lot of lender companies have been aggressively arguing against it. They've made arguments about it costing jobs, eliminating jobs at a time when obviously the president does not want to be seen as eliminating jobs. There is a lot of dispute about whether the numbers are accurate or inflated, but there are concerns about this will increase the government's debt. You know, the government, by making more student loans, will increase its debt load at a time when fiscal conservatives don't like doing that. So there is, basically there are a whole, the vote counters, and I'm not a real insider here in Washington in terms of, I don't sit in Congress, but there are people sitting in on the Hill sort of counting votes. Will these three House Democrats who are, fiscal conservatives who might have been supporting health care, be less likely to do so because of their concern about losing jobs in their states? I mean, there's a lot of jockeying around right now, and that's why I think it could go really down to the wire.
Right.
It
is. I don't think many people are aware of this, Doug, that you've got this huge health care reform and that this, which is a significant thing for students and their families, is also included. I'll bet 95% of the American public has no idea that's going on.
Yeah, it's happened very recently. I mean, the one thing to keep in mind is that in terms of individual students and families, the question of sort of who makes their loans isn't all that important. In other words, right now, students don't really choose who they borrow from. They don't choose whether they borrow from the government or from a lender. Their school makes that decision. This is a sort of school-based, school-by-school decision. A school will decide whether up until now, whether it has participated in this direct loan program, which is the government-run program, or this the guaranteed loan program, which is government-supported but not government-run. So an individual student, this doesn't have huge implications for. Where there are implications is, the money that they would use from producing this bill, from making this loan changes, will, they're talking about adding $40, $50 billion to Pell Grants, which are money for low-income students. And so there are ways in which this bill definitely has major implications for students, but the actual student loan changes don't affect the average student very much, or at least they wouldn't. It's not surprising that they aren't as aware of it, but it's also sort of one of those strange Washington things that really don't, most people aren't aware of. So.
Make the process fascinating, but sometimes incomprehensible.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Was this something new that they would take the money that would be generated from a switch here and put it toward the cost of the health care program? Did somebody think that would be a good idea, or is it always been so?
Well, it's just practical. Well, here's, again, I'm leery of going too much into the weeds of this, but basically the way this process called budget reconciliation works. Congress has used this process a lot in the last few years. It used to be very rare. It's much less rare now. It's used whenever there are changes. Whenever Congress wants to make major changes to what are called the mandatory or entitlement programs. There are obviously every year Congress goes through and allocates money through an appropriations process. But when it wants to make changes in Medicare, in student loans, which are, again, sort of on the side of the budget where Congress doesn't, anybody who wants or qualifies for these programs gets to participate in them. So whenever Congress wants to make changes in those programs, they use this budget reconciliation process. And so they have done so a bunch of times. When Congress passes a budget resolution at the start of the budget year, which is usually around this time of year, it says it gives Congress the ability to create budget reconciliation language or legislation, but there's a requirement that it actually reduce the deficit. So the legislation that they passed about a year ago that basically opened the door to them putting health care and student loans through this process mandated that they produce some savings, some reduction in the deficit. So it was always required that they produce at least $1 billion on health care and $1 billion on student loans to reduce the deficit. So basically, at that point, the die was cast that one way or another, they would find this money to reduce the deficit. So it's, and basically, the health care legislation just is so close in terms of its how the math works out in terms of what it costs and what it saves, that the student loan money provides this pot of money that they can use to cover the deficit reduction part of it for the health care bill. So, the people who are supporting it, the education people who, you know, have been had their eye on this money are not real happy about it. I'm deciding whether to go into this, but basically the other thing that has changed, when this bill was passed a year ago or 6 months ago by the House, it was estimated that it would save $87 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, because of the delay, Congress had to rescore, the Congressional Budget Office had to rescore the cost of the savings that would be produced by this bill, and it dropped that figure down to $61 billion.
Mm.
So basically, in the delay, by waiting to pass this bill until now, Congress has basically lost $26 billion that they would have put into these various education programs. They've lost access to that. And the reason that happened, what changed, is that the projections that they made last fall about it saving $87 billion was based on the fact that it was based on how many schools would be making the transition from the guaranteed loan program to the direct loan program. So, you know, because every school that changes and every set of borrowers that moves into those programs saves the government money, it was estimated back last fall that it would save $87 billion. In those few months, a whole lot of schools have made the transition on their own because the legislation was pending.
Right.
And as a result, the amount that the bill would save when it gets passed has gone down. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes perfect sense.
So what that means is, by waiting, they have they have a lot less money to spend on the things they want to spend it on. So where the bill that the House passed was going to do all the things I talked about before, increase Pell Grants, fund $10 billion in community colleges. They were going to use a whole bunch of money, billions of dollars, to increase early childhood education. You know, they had turned this bill, like often happens in Congress, into a Christmas tree where there were lots of presents for lots of different people to get them to support it.
Mm-hmm.
They've basically got to the point now, because there's so much less money that would be produced by the changes, they've whittled much of that away. The community colleges have essentially lost all their money. The early childhood education is gone. It is at the point now, and again, this is what's still in flux, and we're going to find out a little more today. It may be that it produces the Pell Grant increase and almost nothing else.
Oh my gosh, what a story, and well worth hearing too. Oh my, Doug Letterman is our guest, editor and co-founder of Inside Higher Education, and we're welcoming phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. We'll take your phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, during this time period, within 7 weeks after President John F. Kennedy's death, Jacqueline Kennedy received more than 800,000 condolence letters. 2 years later, the number would exceed 1.5 million letters. And for 46 years, the letters would remain essentially untouched. You've probably heard about this book, Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. We'll be speaking with Ellen Fitzpatrick, who's a professor and scholar specializing in modern American political and intellectual history. She has compiled many of these letters, and they are so moving, including this one. This is just a sampling. A gentleman from Oklahoma City, Mr. Loke, who writes, "Mrs. Kennedy, I'm just an old 73-year-old man who lost his wife in 1963, and I can feel the sorrow you are going through. My wife died in my arms as your husband died in your arms. And when I watched you on television as you walked behind that flag-draped coffin, I cried my eyes out. I know you received thousands of letters, but I just wanted to tell you I think you are one of the most wonderful women on earth. May God always bless you. Series of letters from people of all ages, all walks of life, poor, rich, Republican, independents, Democrats, whose lives really were changed on that November day in 1963. It will be a moving and interesting show. All right, let's go to phone calls for Doug. Now that we have an understanding of the incredible complexity of this student loan program and how it's tied to the health care bill and why it is and how much money has been lost as a result of all of this. What a story. Let's go to your phone calls. Jim on the road is with us. Hey, Jim.
Hi. It's very interesting. We just got a letter in the mail from Whirlpool. I retired. Just got a letter in the mail from Whirlpool Corporation. At the end of this year, they're dropping their retirees' insurance and supplemental insurance. So do we need health care passed? Yes, we do. And I'd just like to say to your guest, thank him for the information that he's put forth today on the air. But I'd also like to remind him and the listeners of your program that you can thank the Republican Party for these delays. Now, do I agree with the health care bill as it is now? Would I like a better one? Yes. But this one's a start, and it can be built on, so I hope they pass it. But with the college loan intact in it, I'd like to also say this, that the Republican Party evidently is not welcome or satisfied with the $87 billion savings we could make a year on this. The government guarantees these loans anyway. Our granddaughter goes to school and gets some of these loans. So I just want to take this time to thank the Republican Party for costing the taxpayers another $80 billion.
Thanks for your call, Jim. Doug?
I think that's a fairly common sentiment. I mean, I think there's been a lot of the lenders obviously don't agree with that sentiment, but they, I mean, and the caller is absolutely right. When I was talking about the fact that there are two separate loan programs, they are separate, but both of them sort of are government supported. The caller is absolutely right that the subsidies that the government pays to the lenders, it guarantees the loans. I mean, these are in many ways relatively low risk loans because the government, if a student doesn't pay back a loan, and the lender is unable to collect them, the government guarantees those loans. And that's been one of the arguments that the sort of advocates for students have been making, is that the sort of subsidies to the lenders have been unnecessary, and that the sort of it's time for this quote gravy train to stop.
And why did it start? How long has that practice been around?
Well, it's interesting. It's been around about 50 years, and it was, I mean, when back in the 60s, when sort of student loans just got started, lending to students was seen as pretty risky. I mean, remember, this is a time back when lending in general was people wanted to, most things you get a loan for, you have to give something back. You have to put up your house. And students typically haven't had a lot to put up for that. You know, they haven't had collateral. So these were, there was a sense that they had to entice, private lenders into the, you know, to give them incentives to make loans to students that were seen as risky, and the process worked for a long time in some way. They've built some very big companies. Sallie Mae was a government enterprise that wound up becoming a separate company. You know, a lot of companies did very well on this, and then it was in the early 1990s when President Clinton was in office that the government sort of first started to try to recoup some of that by creating this competing loan program. And the two programs have been sort of competing on and off for the last 20 years. and it was the financial crisis of a couple of years ago that sort of tipped the balance to the government wanting to sort of pull this whole thing back into it. So it's been a long, long fight, and you know, the lenders have money, and they've been
sure.
They've been lobbying Congress pretty aggressively to keep their piece of it.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim, for your call. Bill from Winneconnie is next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Two related, I guess, comments, kind of rhetorical. But the financial crisis, ironically, was through mismanagement by the very people, and I've worked there, with espouse, you know, free markets and competition and making money on your money and being, you know, wise about it. And yet, the people that seem to have trouble paying back the student loans, from what I've heard, and the same thing from people that raise money for charities with doctors and lawyers, are the people that are most delinquent in paying these loans. I had a loan like that 30, 40 years ago. It was wonderful. The bank was wonderful, Citibank, you know, rapacious Wall Street bank, whatever. But I was behind on payments. I probably forgot to pay, being more interested in other things. And they called me up and say, would you like to stretch it a couple months? And I said, sure. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And they did it. And here I am today, you know, much the wiser. But I'm just astounded, like the previous caller, who was very eloquent, that how the party of, you know, frugalness and business, and we got to run America like a business, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, ad nauseum. Is the one that can throw away that many $1 billion. I mean, and you're investing in the future. I mean, one of the most primary purposes of loans and raising capital, whether it's for students or medical training or whatever, is to invest in the future. Likewise with the healthcare. I'm just astounded. And they blow money on black ops that we read about in the Times yesterday, and squander money on tanks that get blown up. I mean, yes, we need national defense, but I mean, the amount of money that's wasted by people that want a strong defense. And I'm not blaming the Army. I'm just blaming they get involved in wars where this stuff gets used up. It's not an investment. I mean, it's an investment in security, kind of. But, you know, I mean, it's astounding. It really is. I mean, it's so hypocritical that I'm shocked. I'm shocked. What can I say?
Doug.
I think that's above my pay grade. There is lots of, the reasons why this money is disappearing has sort of shrunk. There are lots of reasons to go around and lots of blame to go around. So I'm probably not the right person to sort of cast blame here. The other factor here, I tried to explain, don't know how successful I was at explaining why the sort of quote savings from this bill have shrunk.
Yes,
the other
right.
thing that has changed, and again, it's related to the economy, the cost of So originally the bill was going to create $87 billion in savings, and they were going to spend about $40 billion on the Pell Grant program, and they were going to basically tie in future increases in the Pell Grant to the consumer price index, the sort of inflation rate, plus 1%. So they were basically going to make sure that the Pell Grant, which is the sort of bedrock student loan program for needy students, increased every year by a set amount by the cost inflation rate plus 1%, and that was supposed to cost the government $40 billion. Because so many more students have gone back to college because they haven't been able to get jobs, and because individuals' financial situations have gotten worse, the number of students qualifying for Pell Grants has gone way up. So right now, that program doing what they were aiming to do, the cost of that has gone from $40 billion. It's soared. And basically right now, they're planning to spend about $55 billion just to increase the Pell Grant by the inflation rates. So they've already dropped the 1% increase. So basically, there's just the delay in considering and passing this bill has the sort of situation on the ground has changed, that it's changed the economics of this bill very much. So there's in terms of whether who's to blame, like I said, there's a lot of blame to go around. But bottom line is that the money has just sort of vanished because of the delay in considering the bill.
How much money do we have any idea? Do private lending companies stand to lose from this?
You know, it's really hard. I'm not. If I had a number, I wouldn't be confident in it. But I mean, the one thing you do. The other thing I should mention is that it's not like this whole industry would be wiped out. What this legislation would do would be to prevent. It would make it so that private lenders no longer originate or sort of make loans at the beginning. They would still have a role in, quote, what's called servicing the loans, which is collecting on them and helping borrowers repay them and all that stuff. And so there's still going to be a role for the private sector in this loan program. Under this bill, under this legislation, the government would contract out with some of these private loan companies. So Sallie Mae and Citibank and all these some of these other players that are in this business now would stay in business. Their role would change, or it would, you know, their roles would be altered. So it's not like it would. I mean, while it's really sexy to talk about sort of a complete government takeover and killing an industry, it wouldn't really do that. It would alter that industry, and there would certainly be some lenders that would vanish. But some of them have pulled out already because of the changing economics of the market.
Thank you, Bill, for your call. We go to Marie from Marshfield. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I just wanted to say when I graduated from high school in 1961, I went to University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. At that time, it was a college for 1 year. And I worked part-time all the way until my junior year. And then I was in education, and they came out with a national defense loan through the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. And I applied and got $750. And you could erase your loan by the number of years you taught. And I never did have to pay it back. I taught at Marshfield for 39 years.
Oh, good for you.
And I really think that was a good thing. I was a farmer's kid. They didn't make any more than $14,000 gross a year. And it was a lifesaver, and I got my college education. I went on to get my master's as well. So I'm all for the government running the loan through the university. It would be nice to cut out all the middlemen and just have the money go through the university. They can verify the student status, and then you had to file. After I was teaching, you filed every year until the loan disappeared.
Mm-hmm. And that's still largely the way it works. And listen, that's the thing. This is when you asked before about why, whether it was a good or a bad thing to sort of connect these bills. The student loan legislation is, very few people are against student loans, against student aid. And that's this is a popular, in a lot of ways, it's a popular set of priorities. There is a very strong, self-interest on the part of the lenders to oppose it, and there are some principled reasons why people are opposed to this particular proposal. But there are very few people who would argue against the importance of providing money to help people pay for college. I mean, it's a winning issue on that front. There's just nothing in Washington is simple when you involve special interests.
Thanks very much for the call. Can you talk a little bit more about Pell Grants, about the increases we'd see in the number of students or the amount of money that low-income students, how you qualify for those? I know that there was a time in this country when not that many were being granted. How does the bill address this?
Sure. Well, again, it's the broad goals of the Obama administration is to – I mean, there has been there are many, many more students who go to college. I mean, we have a very democratic, small d democratic higher education system in this country, and a lot of other countries, higher education is really a privilege and something that tends to be to go enormously disproportionately to the wealthy. We don't have quite the equity that a lot of people think we should in this country, but we have millions of students who get grants to go to college based on their having incomes below a certain amount. And there's this complex formula. There's this very famous form called the federal application for free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA. And one of the other things that the government, that the Obama administration has been working on, is simplifying the process by which students apply for federal aid and making it sort of easier for people to navigate. But bottom line, what this legislation would do would be to the Pell Grant, after years of stagnation, that the Pell Grant did not increase during most of the early part of the 2000 decade. In the last few years, Congress, through the stimulus bill and through a couple other pieces of legislation, has significantly, it started increasing at the end of the Bush administration, and it has continued to go up. But the maximum Pell Grant right now would, under this legislation, would rise from its current, it's in the high 4,000s. The sort of maximum grant would rise into the mid 6,000. So, you know, would rise by about, was that almost 50%?
Yes.
Over the next few years. And unfortunately for a lot of people, the cost of college has gone up significantly, and more people are having trouble paying for college. I've got a 16-year-old, so I'm staring down the barrel of this right now myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the Pell Grant, you know, the whole goal here is to try to continue to make college affordable for a broad number of Americans.
More phone calls in a moment, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the student loan bill and the complexities thereof, not necessarily as much within the bill, although there are some there, as with its being tied to health care reform, and where savings from passage of the bill would be going to health care, going to more Pell Grants, and why they are together. And it's the process itself is absolutely fascinating. Our guest is joining us and knows the insides outs of this, Doug Letterman, who is editor and co-founder of Inside Higher Education. He oversees the news content, opinion pieces, career advice, blogs, and other features. He also has written widely for a number of different publications. He was the managing editor of the Chronicle of Higher Education from 1999 to 2003, and he is our guest this hour. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls, Tom from Madison. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to know, you mentioned that the student health or the student loan program was being bundled in part to help justify the cost of the CBO numbers,
right,
as opposed to the health care bill, which is going to cost us money. I thought the president told us that the health care bill was going to generate billions of dollars. And secondly, if all the student loan program does is help students go to school via Pell Grants and increase spending and this, that, and the other, how is it generating the additional $5 billion that the health care bill is going to take from that program? And where's the generating of the money part come in?
Yeah, it's accounting. So basically, right now, the way this works is that the government makes loans at borrows money. Both the government in its program and the lenders in their program borrow money from bigger lenders. I mean, I'm no financial markets expert, but let's say there's a company out there that makes student loans. They borrow money from investors, and then they loan it out to students. And the difference between what they borrow the money at and what they loan it to students at is they get to keep. The government does the same thing, and by taking this program over, the government will borrow the money at a cheaper rate than the lenders are able to borrow it at, and the government will also save the money that it pays to the lenders to originate the loans. The savings are generated by the difference between what the government charges, what the government borrows the money at. Let's say it borrows at 3%, and what it loans the money out at, which is quite a bit higher. And so what you might ask is, well, wait, isn't this just money that the students are paying? And it is, but right now that money is going to the lenders, and instead under this plan it would go to the government. So that's where the savings would come from. One of the other things that the bill was supposed to do was to keep was to keep the student loan interest rate lower. The student loan interest rate has historically been up at about 6.8%. It has been dropping over the last couple of years because of a bill that passed Congress a few years ago. It has been dropping down to 3.5%. And this legislation was designed to keep that student loan interest rate low. But that's another thing that appears to be a casualty of this most recent sort of set of economic assumptions. So the bottom line is that the savings come from the government taking in the money that now goes to the lenders in the difference between the two interest rates. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's where the quote savings come from. And there are people who sort of bristle at that and say, well, why don't they just lower the interest rate and not make as much money on the loans and help the students who borrow? And I think that's a legitimate point. What the government would say is they're using that money to put toward other purposes, to help low-income students go to college and to do these other things that they want to.
When are we going to know if these two bills will be linked, the health care bill and the student loan?
Well, at this moment, they are linked. In other words, later today, the Democrats are supposed to unveil a bill that will show the two measures linked. Mm-hmm. The big question, whether they stay linked as Congress, basically, I think what's happening, and I'm not inside the meeting rooms, but I think right now the Democrats in Congress are spending lots of time figuring out how many votes they have. And I guess they're supposed to vote sometime in the next few days. At some point, if they conclude, and again, there's going to be a vote in the House, and then there's going to be a vote in the Senate, and at either point, at any point, somebody could, the Democratic leaders could decide that if they think the bill, the student loan piece of it, is costing them votes, if there are legislators who, either because of the jobs issue or something else, say, I would vote for this healthcare legislation, but I'm not going to because of the student loan part of it. If the number of people saying that leads them to conclude that it's costing them more votes than it's winning them, they'll dump it in a second. And that's but again, that could be decided at multiple points in the next few days as this works its way through Congress. Right now the two are connected, but whether it's they sort of stay connected, I've had people tell me that it's sort of 50-50.
Right. I don't know how you can even determine it. You've got enough problems with the complications of the health care bill, for heaven's sake. Wow.
Well, and that's actually another factor. I think there are some Democrats who might just say, listen, we're going to have a hard enough time understanding this and explaining it to our to our constituents. We don't want to complicate it up, and we're just going to sever it, and we'll deal with the student loan thing next year, which is certainly possible. And but it's again, it's very fluid, and it's definitely I think a lot of the people on the Hill are a little confused, to be honest.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom, for your call. Lori from Watertown. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about the new student loan proposal. Will the students or the graduates' loan payments be based on their income, or will they be based on the loan as they are now?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's a very good question. It was about a year and a half ago that Congress created, as part of another piece of legislation that extended the Higher Education Act, which is the main law that governs all federal higher education programs, created this thing called income-based repayment. And it basically creates a way for borrowers' repayments of their loans to be tied to how much they earn. And one of the other things that the bill that Congress has proposed doing, the president proposed it in his budget for this year, was expanding that program in a pretty significant way. What's unclear, I've been hearing, but I haven't been able to confirm because I haven't seen the language yet, that the sort of expansion of income-based repayment is included in this measure that would basically make it easier for people to repay their loans by the whole point, one of the real concerns here is that student loans, having big debt, forces people into professions and jobs that earn more, that pay more so that they can repay their loans. And what that means is that they're less likely to, like your previous caller, to go into teaching that may not pay as much. So the whole idea behind income-based repayment is to try and make it easier for people to afford to go into professions that may serve society more than they, you know, line the pockets.
Right.
And so if this income-based repayment thing is something that the Obama administration really feels strongly about, and I think because it doesn't cost that much, because it's spread out over a long, long period of time, it doesn't cost much from a sort of accounting standpoint. So I've been hearing I've been hearing that that's part of this bill, I just don't have the final information yet.
Doug, thank you so much. I'll be
my pleasure.
Following
I'll,
this
I'll
with
clear enough, and if I can help
yes.
in the future, don't hesitate
thank
to be
you.
In touch.
You were great. It makes you want to follow this much more closely, doesn't it? Doug Letterman, editor and co-founder of Inside Higher Education. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this program, and to Chrissy as well for on-air production. Thanks for listening, everybody. Great conversation ahead on the Ideas Network.